This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's talk about untying knots, draining the swamp. Let's talk about foreign policy things. Washington, D.C., Donald Trump just took on a lobby there. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk about the system, the swamp, draining the swamp. Let's talk about all this because we're all going through something here. All of us. I'm going through the exact same thing you're going through. We're all doing the same thing right now. Donald Trump won an election in November. We're excited about that. Happy. Couldn't afford all that. Yeah. But we didn't want Trump to be there just to be there, right? You have things you want him to do. I have things I want him to do. And one of the things that's central to most of us on the right is exposing and stopping the terrible corruption inside of Washington, D.C. Obviously, that's that draining the swamp is what most people call it. We've called it that here, but the system, the criminal enterprise, whatever it is. So let's discuss that, what's happening, what's not happening, reality versus what we wish. Let's talk about it. First, let's think about a knot. I'm talking about the worst knot you've ever had to confront. You thinking about it? Maybe it was a bunch of wires or one wire, shoestrings, cords, something. At some point, you're like, maybe fishing. If you're fishing, you've encountered it. At some point, you've encountered a knot that is a disaster. Now, why is it a disaster? Time. Over a long enough period of time, this mixing with this and that and this and that, the knot just got worse and worse and tighter and tighter and tighter over time. The longer it was festering, the worse it got. Now, how do you untie it? With time. That's the truth. Draining the swamp is going to take a lot of time because creating the swamp took a lot of time. We didn't get to this place of corruption as a country 5 years ago. You know, it didn't start under Joe Biden, although he may have made it all worse. It didn't even start under Barack Obama. Decades and decades of neglect by us, the public, and evil deeds by people in Washington, D.C. has created this knot that may seem impossible at times. Well, I don't believe it is impossible. I will tell you this just right between the eyes. It's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of effort, focused, ongoing effort. We're not going to be able to look at it and just solve it with one election. That's not how it works. For instance, let's talk about the Epstein stuff, because that's probably a priority one for a lot of people. Jeffrey Epstein, as you already know, billionaire, financier, famously was involved with underage sex trafficking, just the grossest stuff you can possibly imagine. And he wasn't doing it alone. He was friends, partners with a lot of the wealthiest, most powerful people on the planet. We don't know who exactly did what, but we know for a fact that, for instance, he was signed, it's public record, he was signed into Bill Clinton's White House multiple times. Jeffrey Epstein famously had a painting of Bill Clinton, a really weird one. He's in a blue dress. It's odd. Jeffrey Epstein was friends with Bill Gates. We know his wife gave an interview where she blamed their friendship as part of the reason she divorced him. Very interesting, right? So again, we're talking wealthy, powerful people, royal family members. And so you, me, I would like to know who these people are. If you are abusing women, especially underage ones, but really any age, if you are abusing women and children, I don't care how much money you're worth or how powerful you are, I believe you should be brought to justice just the same way anyone would. And so we're very interested in that Epstein list. Now, Kash Patel, head of the FBI, gave a little update on it.
Did Jeffrey Epstein himself or did somebody call him?
Senator, I believe he himself in a cell in the Metropolitan Detention Center.
Are you going to release all the information about that?
Senator, we are working through that right now with the Department of Justice.
When do you think you'll have it done, Cash?
I think in the near future, sir.
Like before I die?
Senator, we are we've been working on that, and we're doing it in a way that protects victims.
Okay. Well, that was about as non-committal as non-committal can get. So what's at play here? Is Kash Patel using his role at the FBI to protect evil, powerful sex traffickers? I doubt that very much. That's not his reputation. I don't know Kash Patel, but he has an excellent reputation. I doubt that. So what's really at play? Are they really protecting victims? Maybe. Do keep in mind, it's a very, very dangerous thing to have damaging information on wealthy, powerful men. It can be very hazardous to your health, as you are well aware. Maybe they are protecting victims. Maybe the wealthy, powerful men who are about to be exposed, possibly, maybe they have outstanding $1,000-an-hour attorneys who are mucking up the whole process. Maybe. Maybe there are people on that list who didn't commit any crimes or necessarily do anything wrong. Remember, this was a billionaire financier with a private jet. Somebody came to you with a potential business deal and said, I'll send my private jet along. Would you hop on? Would you do all the vetting of him first? Probably not. I don't know that I would. You offer me a private jet. Maybe somebody rode on that jet who didn't do anything wrong, didn't touch anybody, didn't hurt anyone. I don't know. Now, I don't know. But I guess that's the point of this entire conversation when it comes to the system and the swamp. And there are many, many, many things we don't know, things we want to know. Some things we'll never know, but here's what we do know. We know that the corruption of Washington, D.C. is years and years and years in the making. We have a bad knot to untie, and electing Donald Trump for 4 more years is not going to get the job done. It helps. It's a lot better than electing Dome. It helps. But even if he was perfect, and he's not, and nobody is, but even if he was perfect, you can't undo decades of Washington, D.C. corruption walking in there for your final 4 years of president. That's not how it works at all. Remember Ed Martin? This was a story from last week, but it's kind of a big deal. The U.S. attorney, the D.C. court system is one of the most evil court systems on planet Earth. I am not overstating that at all. I don't care where you go, North Korea, Russia, Iran. I don't know that you can find a more biased, evil court system than the one in Washington, D.C. That court system is the reason all these nonviolent January 6ers were charged with things like terrorism and thrown in cages, because you can convict any Republican of anything there. You can't get a Democrat conviction because they're all communists, and you can convict a Republican of anything, of spitting on the sidewalk, they'll throw them in prison there. And that D.C. court system, it is, in many ways, the enforcement arm and protectorate of the swamp. So Trump wanted Ed Martin. Ed Martin's a good man. We've interviewed him here on this show before. Ed Martin wanted to drain the swamp. Tom Tillis, Republican senator, stopped it. Stopped Ed Martin. So Trump came out last week. He said this.
He wasn't getting the support from people that I thought, you know, he's done a very good job. Crime is down 25% in D.C. During his period of time. I'm very disappointed in that, but I have so many different things that I'm doing now with the trade. You know, I'm one person. I can only make, boom, I can only lift that little phone so many times in a day. But we have somebody else that will be great. I just want to say Ed is unbelievable, and hopefully we can bring him into whether it's DOJ or whatever, in some capacity, because really outstanding. It was, to me, it was disappointing, I'll be honest. I have to be straight. I was disappointed. A lot of people were disappointed. But that's the way it works sometimes.
Now, when Donald Trump made those comments last week, I felt then, and I do feel now, it's not that I've changed my mind, a bit of frustration with that tone, and this is what I mean by that. Donald Trump is not afraid to crucify anybody publicly if they anger him. He'll go on social media and call an actress fat and stupid. I mean, Donald Trump will blast away at anybody. Donald Trump bounced Bob Good from Congress, the most conservative, one of the most conservative members of Congress. Primaried him, gone. Has publicly threatened Chip Roy, Thomas Massie with primaries for opposing spending bills. Donald Trump will come after you, left, right, middle. Tom Tillis, Republican senator from North Carolina, single-handedly, pretty much, in conjunction with Democrats, but really single-handedly stopped Donald Trump's pick for U.S. Attorney of D.C. Trump gets on there and kind of, I was disappointed, you know. Like my son brought home a B in math or something like that. Well, I'm disappointed. And so I was frustrated by that. But the more I listened to it a couple of times more over the weekend. You know what I heard there? Actually, I'm gonna ask the producer to play that clip again here in just 1 second when I call for it. But you know what I heard here? I heard a man that maybe in a tired moment, an honest moment, I heard a man who's exhausted trying to untie the knot.
He wasn't getting the support from people that I thought. You know, he's done a very good job. Crime is down 25% in D.C. During his period of time. I'm very disappointed in that, but I have so many different things that I'm doing now with the trade. You know, I'm one person. I can only lift that little phone so many times in a day. But we have somebody else that will be great. I just want to say Ed is unbelievable, and hopefully we can bring him into, whether it's DOJ or whatever, in some capacity, because really outstanding. To me, it was disappointing, I'll be honest. I have to be straight. I was disappointed. A lot of people were disappointed. But that's the way it works sometimes.
I'm only one man. I can only pick up the phone. I was just disappointed. Sounds like a guy who's exhausted. And that brings us to Congress. Here's a little fun stat came out. This GOP, remember, the GOP controls the House and the Senate. They've sent fewer bills to the White House to be signed than any Congress in 7 decades. 70 years. 70 years. It was the Korean War since we had a Congress that did this little. It's exhausting. Where's the rest of our help? But it goes to the point that I really want to make here, a point we've made many times before. We still have a lot of work to do, and we can get it done, but it's not going to be fast. It's not going to be easy. There are Democrats filling up the swamp. Remember what Chip Roy told us last week? There are Republicans protecting the swamp. So the Republicans saying they won't repeal the IRA, they're just Republicans getting fat federal checks for their district, right?
That's exactly right. And so to be clear, The CBO said that we could save about $750 billion. Right now, I'm being told that they're going to find $400 billion in savings. You know what that really means is $350 billion are a bunch of like, hey, I need to bring home the checks to my corn states, or let me be fair, there are Texans. Oh, we have oil and gas companies that wanted their free money too. I don't mind walking into Houston, where you are, or going out to Midland or in Austin and walking into the boardrooms and saying, guys, I am opposing the subsidies that you're taking on the back of your children and my children and our grandchildren. I have no problem telling Texans that. We should not be doing that and selling out the future of our country to walk into rooms and say, oh, we're bringing home your free subsidies. They're not free. They're killing our country.
There's a lot of people protecting the swamp. One final example of this. You saw the video last week of the Democrat members of Congress assaulting federal agents at an ICE facility, assaulting federal agents in an attempt to break out illegals who were being held inside. You saw all that. Now, that's a felony. If you walked up to a federal agent guarding an ICE facility, and if you so much as laid a finger on them, you would be charged with a felony. If you shoved one, elbowed one, as Democrats did on camera, honestly, even if you didn't have a criminal record, that's probably 10 years, you're gone. You'll be saying hello to your wife and children through prison glass for 10 years. Those Democrats should all have already been arrested, charged with felonies, on the way to prison, lawyering up. Republicans in D.C., Michael McCaul, this is how committed they are.
I'm just curious, should ICE be arresting or even threatening to arrest members of Congress?
I mean, that's obviously a very drastic move. I would only do that if they were complicit with a crime. I don't know all the facts behind this. If they were just visiting a detention center, that's I've done that many times. If they're disrupting law enforcement, that's another question. So, you know, we can peacefully protest in this country, but you cannot be complicit with gang violence against our law enforcement. And I think perhaps that's what it comes down to. And if I could just add one last thing on the Gaza.
Well, with a stance like that, you see, we got a lot of work to do on the knot. It won't be fast. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Let's talk about something good, really, really good. You ready for that? Before we do that, let me talk to you about something great. How I slept last night. I don't want to rub it in, but yesterday was Mother's Day, running around, all kinds of things, and then the end of the day came, and I got what is known as the Sunday scaries. Have you ever heard of that before? That's that moment on Sunday where you realize, oh my gosh, the weekend's about over. Monday's here tomorrow. We got to go to work. Got to get ready. What did I do? About 9 o'clock last night, I went to the kitchen, made myself a cup of hot chocolate. Dream powder from Beam hot chocolate. It's delicious. Cinnamon, chocolate. But it puts me to sleep with natural things. Things like melatonin and reishi and all kinds of things. I slept like a baby, like 10 hours last night. Woke up ready to go. You want to sleep like that? You want to feel like that every Monday, every day? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. All right, let's talk about something wonderful. And Donald Trump is really, really great at foreign policy. He just is. And there are reasons behind that, which we'll get into in just a moment. But let me first talk about the release of the hostage, Eden Alexander. Guy was held by Hamas long time. Trump gets him sprung. Here he was talking about it.
Eden's the only American citizen captured and held hostage by Hamas since October 7th, 2023. And he's coming home to his parents, which is really great news. I mean, to me, it's big news. They thought he was dead. So that's that.
All right. I love this about Donald Trump, and it actually makes me angry at other American presidents like Joe Biden and Obama, but I love that Donald Trump brings Americans home. If you are an American citizen, and you are held abroad by an evil foreign government, an evil terrorist organization, you have every right to expect your president, Democrat or Republican, whoever it is, to get you home. That's the deal. That's the reason, that's part of the reason we elect these people to serve this country, protect this country. An American president should see it as one of his highest duties to find American citizens wherever they may be around the globe and get them home. And Democrats just don't do this anymore. And this really comes down to how you see yourself and how you see America. It's part of the reason Trump is so very good at it. Donald Trump loves this country. I really don't think that's deniable. It's obvious. He's been talking lovingly about America since, well, years before he ever got into politics. He loves the country. And more importantly, or probably as important, Donald Trump sees himself. He sees himself as a protector of us, as the American people. And that's how I want the American president to see himself. He sees himself as someone who should look out for you. No matter who you are, no matter where you're held, if you're held somewhere else, he will make it a priority to bring you home, and he does. And I just love that so much. And I love the fact that Donald Trump doesn't want war. A lot of political leaders today and always have loved war. War can be profitable, it can be good for your popularity, but it really takes somebody to command the most powerful army on the planet and always push for peace, which Trump does. Remember his inaugural address when he talked about it?
My proudest legacy will be that of a peacemaker and unifier. That's what I want to be, a peacemaker and a unifier.
Well, he didn't just say that. India and Pakistan, you remember all that dust up last week. Maybe you at least saw some headlines about it. Well, these countries historically despise each other. There's all kinds of history there, which I won't go into here, but it's all ugly. Right? It's really, really bad. They hate each other. They're right next to each other, and they're always fighting. They just hate each other. And something breaks out, and it's getting bad, and people are dying. And people are looking, and they're saying, my goodness, these are both nuclear powers. Two nuclear powers who hate each other are starting to kill each other. This could get way out of control. Badly. Well, the American president didn't have to. Stepped in.
On Saturday, my administration helped broker a full and immediate ceasefire, I think a permanent one, between India and Pakistan, ending a dangerous conflict of two nations with lots of nuclear weapons. And they were going at it hot and heavy, and it was seemingly not going to stop. We helped a lot. And we helped also with trade. I said, come on, we're going to do a lot of trade with you guys. Let's stop it. Let's stop it. If you stop it, we're doing trade. If you don't stop it, we're not going to do any trade. People have never really used trade the way I used it, that I can tell you. And all of a sudden, they said, I think we're going to stop. And they have. And we stopped the nuclear conflict. I think it could have been a bad nuclear war.
And that is a big part of why he's very good at foreign policy as well. Donald Trump has made deals his whole life. You know the book he wrote, Art of the Deal and whatnot, but both foreign and domestic, Donald Trump has dealt with powerful men across the planet, always trying to make a deal. Hey, why are we fighting? There's no need to fight. Let's make a deal. I'll get a little bit and you get a little bit. Let's make a deal. He approaches the American presidency the exact same way. You just heard it right there. He sits down, India, Pakistan. Hey, come on. Let's do a deal. We'll make it work for you. We'll make it work for you. You can have some extra curry. We'll throw a little bit of this, a little of that in. It'll work out for everybody. Makes deals with people. And it works. And now people aren't dying. It matters. And it's a far, far departure from what we get every daggone time there's a Democrat president.
We immediately rejoined the Paris Agreement. We convened major climate summits and reestablished. I apologize we ever pulled out of the agreement.
3 years. I'm sorry. We kind of suck. I'm sorry. It's freaking awful. Glad we're done with that. Anyway, let's move on. Because we have more things, foreign things to discuss. Before we get to those foreign things, let's get to something as American as it gets. And that would be Chalk. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Do I seem excited when I talk about Chalk? I am, because I feel 10 years younger. I do. I have so much energy. About my late 30s, just felt like my energy wasn't there anymore. I needed a coffee all day, just horrible. And then I started taking a male vitality stack from Chalk, and my mind feels good. Does that sound weird to say? It's true. My mind feels good. I have so much energy, ready to go, not running out of gas, staring at the clock. You want to feel like that? Go get a subscription to something at Chalk. You feel like $1 million. Raise your T levels through the roof, gentlemen. Ladies, energy levels. They have female vitality stacks for you. You want a big fat discount? Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Achieved a total reset with China after productive talks in Geneva. Both sides now agreed to reduce the tariffs imposed after April 2nd to 10% for 90 days as negotiators continue on the largest structural issues. We're not looking to hurt China. China was being hurt very badly. They were closing up factories. They were having a lot of unrest. And they were very happy to be able to do something with us. And the relationship is very, very good.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. at least for 90 days. I don't know what all is going on, but I don't have to. John does. That's what we rely on John for. Joining me now, John Carney, Breitbart News editor, or News Finance and Economics editor. Hey, John, okay, first of all, I'm going to ask you so many stupid questions, it's going to make your head spin, but you're used to that by now. What deal did we have? What deal do we have now? What's with the 90 days? You can just have the show for tonight. What's going on?
Yeah, so Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, and Jameson Greer, the U.S. Trade Representative, went to Switzerland and had what I would call the preliminary discussions. This is really the first time the U.S. and China have gotten together formally since we started putting the tariffs on, since Liberation Day on April 3rd. So what they did is they came together, they, you know, had a day of talks. It wasn't a very prolonged thing. There were some preliminary, you know, talks that went on before that. And they agreed to call it like a 90-day ceasefire, where we would bring down our tariffs to around 10%, plus there's an additional 20% fentanyl tariff that's staying on. China would bring down their tariff to around 10%. They had gone up to 125%. We had gone up to 145%, none of which was the intended tariff level. When Trump announced the tariff levels, it was down near 60% originally on Liberation Day. So they are in talks. And while they're in talks, the tariffs are going to stay lower. There's a reason to be a little skeptical. I know the market is really excited about this. And people are saying, you know, yes, this means like trade war called off. But this is just really it's not even an outline of a deal. It's a plan to make a deal. And so we don't know what's going to happen over the next 90 days or after that. I mean, there's got to be some institutional memory in the Trump administration that last time they made a bunch of deals with China, and China didn't follow through on any of the things that they said they were going to do. And that's one of the reasons why when Trump came back in, he had to go big with tariffs again. So yes, it's a positive that talks began, but we'll have to wait and see to see, you know, where those things really end up and whether China actually follows through on whatever they agree to.
Okay, so I have a feeling I'm about to ask the million-dollar question, which would be a miracle for me, but Trump referenced the larger structural issues, and I can't help but think that's what you seem to be so skeptical of. What larger structural issues are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, a big problem is China's economy basically runs on the idea that they have a huge surplus, that they make a ton more than they consume, that they run trade deficits against the rest of the world, and the United States in particular. I don't know how they can easily address that. It's one of the reasons why I've been skeptical that we would ever really come to a deal with China, because I think they'll say a lot of things, but they really demand almost the right to run trade surpluses, meaning other countries get to have trade deficits with China. And it's hard to see how they move away from that and stay at the level of employment that they really have had. And that in itself, like China can't have a 10% unemployment rate. If unemployment climbs in China, it will become so politically destabilizing that the regime is afraid of that. That's one of the reasons they run their country the way they do, to keep people very busy so that they don't notice that their economy is actually propped up by central planning and exits mainly on exports. So I'm not sure they'll be able to address the structural issues, but I'm glad they're trying. I mean, look, the Trump administration has been a lot more positive and optimistic than I am on this stuff. And, you know, maybe I've grown cynical over the years watching China sort of pull the rug out from administration after administration. They did it to the first Trump administration. So I'm a little cynical. They think that they really can get something done. And so I hope that they're right and that I'm wrong on that.
How How does this work when we have a new president in 3 years, John? Meaning, can China just kind of ride this out? Or is the political situation, as you mentioned, so sensitive there that they have to get something done too? Essentially, I'm worried about the dictatorship knowing it can ride out the elected president.
Yeah, that's always been a danger. But I actually think in this case, time is on our side. Xi Jinping is not Xi Jinping from 10 years ago. In 2015, he was a much younger man. Time is no longer on Xi Jinping's side. He will eventually not be the supreme leader of China. We're 10 years closer to the day when he's not doing it, being the leader of China, than we were 10 years ago. How long does he have? Nobody knows. He doesn't look like a very healthy man to me. And he may get turned out before he intends to leave. China is not a stable country. There are a lot of things in the background happening. People, you find out about generals who disappear, or, you know, various secretaries, undersecretaries who just vanish. Why? Because it's not a stable country. And I think the other thing that China, that's got to be a little bit jarring to China, is I think they thought the first time around, well, once Trump's gone, they'll take those tariffs off. But Biden didn't do that. Biden actually kept the tariffs on. And if you look across the political spectrum, whether it's Donald Trump all the way to Gavin Newsom actually is saying, yeah, we've got to do something about our trade deficit with China in particular. So looking across the political spectrum in America today, I think they have to be a little more nervous than they were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, they could say, yeah, we've got this crazy Trump guy, but he's on his own. The rest of the American establishment doesn't agree with him. Now, I think we've come to a consensus in this country that we're not going to let China continue to run the kind of abusive, mercantilist, predatory trade policies that they have for the last 25 years. And that's on both parties. So I don't think they can be very confident that if we get it, you know, certainly not if we get J.D. Vance in as the next president, but even if we get a Democrat in, I don't think it's going to be, I think a Democrat's going to have to end up running hard on trade. Remember, Kamala Harris tried to run against tariffs. She called it a national sales tax and failed very badly. I think the next group of Democrats to run are actually going to be pretty hawkish on trade issues.
Let's switch gears a little bit here to address the Fed thing. The Fed thing being the fact that Donald Trump called Jerome Powell a fool last week. What's going on with this little tiff?
Well, yeah, so Donald Trump believes that he should be able to call, you know, the head of the Federal Reserve a fool, or his, you know, too late is his nickname for Jay Powell. He really thinks Jay Powell should be cutting rates. We got some very low inflation reports, particularly the inflation report for March was very low. Later this week, we'll get out the April inflation report. If that's also very low, Donald Trump will have a much better argument. And look, the market does agree that the Fed will start cutting sometime this year, that they'll probably cut three or four times. And Trump's point is that he thinks fuel prices are coming down, we're deregulating, we're going to have more supply side on the economy. And so therefore, we're probably not going to have a lot of inflation. The Fed holding out, maybe holding back the economy. I'll say in defense of Jerome Powell, I think there's a little bit of still reason to be nervous that not all of the Biden inflation has been squeezed out of the economy, that we still may have a residual inflationary impulse in the economy. And if you cut rates too early, you risk reigniting that. So, look, I get it. Trump's a low interest rate guy. He wants them to cut. It's probably been too early. The next meeting or the meeting after that, probably not too early. Then we're probably about ready.
John, as always, brother, I appreciate you very much. Thanks for making us smarter. All right. Trump did something enormous today with Big Pharma. Jeffrey Tucker, as you can imagine, has a lot to say about this. We will get to Jeffrey in a moment. Before we get to Jeffrey, let me get to this. You know I'm not a big jewelry accessory guy. It's just not who I am. I really, really take a lot of pride in my watch. And it's not because it's nice, although it is very nice. It's because it's a Wasson watch. Wasson watch. You know, by a United States Marine, run by a United States Marine veteran. Wasson Watch, the company that not only makes these super nice Swiss watches, they share and promote our values without shame. I love that Wasson Watch. And go look at their social media. If you're wondering, hey, what should I get one? I'm not really sure. Go look. Wasson Watch will be proudly talking about the Second Amendment, about being pro-life. That's what makes me proud of it. It's not just the fact that it's a really nice watch. I love my Wasson watch. You want one? You want a nice discount on one? Can't even tell you how cool the little leather can. Just go get a Wasson watch. WassonWatch.com, code Jesse, gets you a nice discount on one. We'll be back.
So for the first time in many years, we'll slash the cost of prescription drugs, and we will bring fairness to America. Drug prices will come down. But starting today, the United States will no longer subsidize the health care of foreign countries and will no longer tolerate profiteering and price gouging from Big Pharma. But it's called Most Favored Nation. We are going to pay the lowest price there is in the world. We will get whoever is paying the lowest price. That's the price that we're going to get. I am doing this for the American people. I'm doing this against the most powerful lobby in the world, probably the drug lobby, drug and pharmaceutical lobby. But it's one of the most important orders I think that's ever been signed, certainly with regard to health care or health in the history of our country.
Okay. What happened today? My head is spinning about the whole thing. I can't tell. Is it good? Is it going to blow up the market? Is it bad? I don't know. I'd love for everybody to be paying less. Joining me now, somebody who does know, Jeffrey A. Tucker, President, Brownstone Institute. Okay, Jeffrey, pretend I know nothing about Big Pharma, which I pretty much do. What happened today? Was it good? Was it a disaster? Explain this to me.
It's a huge move towards market competition to break up the American cartel of pharmaceutical companies that have been overcharging ridiculous amounts at the expense of the taxpayers for decades and decades. Nobody's ever had the courage to do this. It's an obvious thing. It's a common sense thing. And the executive order, I just read it today, is totally perfect.
Okay. The executive order is perfect. I love to hear that. Now, what cartel are you talking about? Can you describe this pharmaceutical cartel and why, at least in the past, we have been paying like 8 times as much for Tylenol as those dirty Europeans do?
Well, a lot of it comes down to the patents, which essentially established an industrial monopoly, and they're shared with the agencies thanks to the Bayh-Dole Act, which permits this kind of racketeering to go on legally. So that NIH is sharing patents with private producers, and they share employees, and they share funding. Taxpayers are on the hook for funding the R&D for the drugs, and then sometimes even buying all the drugs, and then, of course, through Medicare and Medicaid, being the main customer for these drugs. And no other country is stupid enough to do this. So they charge just normal market prices, which can be a tenth as much as you get in the U.S. So, you know, in the U.S., you might pay $3,000 for a drug and then just go just 1 inch across the Canadian border and it'll be $300 for the exact same drug from the exact same plant. So the whole thing is outrageous. The U.S., they put it today that the U.S. is subsidizing the world, which is kind of true. It's hard to say if that's true. One thing is for sure, Americans are paying monopoly prices. Whether you're paying without insurance, in which case you're absolutely going to get fleeced. If you're paying with insurance, then the insurance company is getting fleeced. And who's getting the profits? It's a lot of times these pharmacy benefit manager companies that are skimming off the top. And it's all coming at the expense of taxpayers and consumers. It's just complete robbery. It's astounding that it's been allowed to go on this long. But the thing is that the pharmaceutical lobby, which Trump pointed out is so powerful in Washington, is exactly right, has always been able to forestall any kinds of changes in this based on the idea that they have a free market in the U.S. and these are free market prices. They're anything but free market prices. And then they also claim that all these excess profits are necessary for research and development. Which, if that's true, it just simply means that American taxpayers, American consumers, are paying vast amounts of money to develop drugs for the world that they're getting at a deep discount. So that by itself is outrageous, but I'm not even sure that's true. I mean, a lot of these drugs are repurposed. When you look at the GLS-1s that everybody is talking about for losing weight, they weren't developed as weight loss drugs. They were developed as diabetes drugs. So that's a secondary purpose. I mean, the research and development didn't discover that. It was discovered in use. So there's wild exaggeration concerning this black hole called R&D, which we're supposed to just be shelling out for forever. But there's what's fascinating to me about this. Like, I watched the press conference today. It was totally great. RFK was fantastic. Trump was amazing in his scope of his knowledge and its ferocity on the subject. Marty McCary, Dr. Oz, and also Jay Bhattacharya were all fantastic. Don't forget, Jay Bhattacharya is also a health economist. He's got a PhD in economics. And a classical liberal libertarian in some ideological sense. But he recognizes, too, this is about creating an internationally competitive market price for these drugs. And so he gave a very articulate statement. What shocks me about the whole thing, or what strikes me as kind of really interesting about this, is that this order from the top, which it, and Trump's right, it's epic. It's like nothing like this has ever happened. Has already set off wars on the left and the right. I mean, for one thing, the left has ostensibly always favored this until they got in bed with Big Pharma, and now they're sort of hilariously against it. So it puts them in the awkward position of arguing for higher drug prices on behalf of a drug cartel. I mean, that's not a good place for the Democrats to be in, but that's where Trump has put them. And then on the other hand, you have the sort of corporate right wing, I guess, for lack of a better term, for example, at the Wall Street Journal, and almost every establishment libertarian, liberty, free market person online that I could find is totally against this on grounds that they say this is price control, which is an Orwellian upside-down claim, but they're making it every day.
Ugh. Jeffrey, I know this is a complicated thing. I asked you to try to do that in about 5 minutes, but I appreciate you giving it an effort. Thank you. All right. We have Light in the Mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood, and Jill Biden is just a heartless, heartless woman. She dragged poor Joe out of retirement and threw a suit on him because she has some new fake gig in Washington, D.C., which will keep her rich and famous. And she had poor Joe do this media tour, and she had to sit there right by him the whole time to hold his little hand because Joe's just not even a functional adult anymore. And they made him... They made him go do The View, and it went about like you thought it was going to go.
Yeah. Mr. President, since you left office, there have been a number of books that have come out, deeply sourced from Democratic sources, that claim in your final year there was a dramatic decline in your cognitive abilities. In the final year of your presidency, what is your response to these allegations, or are these sources wrong?
They are wrong. There's nothing to sustain that. We found ourselves... unable to deal with a lot of just basic issues, and which I won't go into in the interest of time. And so we went to work, and we got it done. And You know, one of the things
one of the things I think is that the people who wrote those books were not in the White House with us, and they didn't see how hard Joe worked every single day.
The benefits. How do you lead the world without having the best infrastructure in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best health care in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best education system in the world? How do you lead the world when you don't have that done?
Four years. That man pretended to be our president for 4 years. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.